So there is in the Torah this very messy incident with Hagar and Ishmael and Abraham, and of course featuring Sarah. Abraham and Sarah can't have a child, and so Sarah says, well, why don't you take my handmaiden Hagar and have a child with her, and everything will be fine. Of course, nobody who reads this thinks everything will be fine. But in fact, they try. Ishmael is born. Immediately, Hagar and Sarah start fighting. Sarah and Abraham start fighting. And Abraham kicks Hagar and the child out of the house. And the question is, whose fault is this? Now, I remember last year when we studied this in the Torah class, almost every party had their advocate, or conversely, their detractor. There are people who said, look, it's clearly Sarah's fault. She's the one who said, take Hagar, have a child with her, we'll work this out. So Sarah deserves the responsibility. She should have been wiser. She should have known, as the commentators say, that you can't rise above your natural level of goodness in such an extreme situation. You don't count on being a tzaddikus. You don't count on being a righteous person, because if it backfires, you're in trouble. But then there were those who said, well, look, Abraham put all the pressure on her. Why was she so keen to have a child? Clearly because Abraham came home and said, by the way, sweetheart, God promised me I'd have a son. I don't want to pressure you more than necessary, but I'm looking around the house. And then when she says, well, I have this handmaiden, Abraham could have said, no, I would never stray outside the marital boundary to be with a handmaiden, but we don't hear that from him. So really, ultimately, the pressure probably came from Abraham, and then there were those who said, well, don't think Hagar was completely without responsibility in this, prancing around the house in her handmaiden garb, you know, helping Abraham, I don't know, get breakfast, whatever it is. There are lots of parties involved, and after all, of course, God set this all up, so maybe it's God's fault. Because he's the one who both said to Abraham, you'll have a child, and presumably is the one who is preventing Sarah from being able to conceive. So there's a lot of blame to go around, which is a biblical illustration, and we'll come to another one in just a second, of the truth that the hardest thing in the world to figure out in anybody's life is what you are responsible for and what you're not. It is extraordinarily difficult, maybe impossible, to figure out what you're really responsible for. When something bad happens, inevitably people start to wonder, did I do this? Was it my fault? How much did I contribute? How much was I responsible? What if I'd done this differently or that differently or something else? And you can torture yourself wondering. Think of it with children. Is that habit my fault? Is that virtue my doing? Did my child get that from the other side of the family? The bad habits. Because I see it in my in-laws. I mean, they do it, so I presume, right? But it is, we train our children in certain ways, and sometimes, children actually end up doing what we train them to, and sometimes they react against it. So you'll have people say, well, look, you've got to push your kids, and other people say, if you push them, they're going to do exactly the opposite. And they're both right. And it's impossible to know. And so we try to figure out, what is my responsibility here? With my children, with myself. What is innate in me? And what did I train myself to? What can I change? And what's set in concrete? You see this with sickness. There are people who believe that all sickness is caused by the person who's sick, like the egregious Bernie Siegel, who will tell you that if you're happy, you don't get sick. Or people who will tell you, if you eat this, you don't get sick. Or if you live in this city instead of that city, you won't get sick. And then you go to the doctor, and the doctor says, oh, it doesn't matter what you eat, it doesn't matter what you do. It's all science, it's all genetics. And between those two poles, both of them, by the way, having a clear measure of evidence on their side, because God knows the world is rich enough to provide evidence for every point of view, and it just depends which internet site you want to click on. With their having evidence on both sides, you got to figure out, is this my fault? Is it the fault of my parents? Is it the fault of my location? And it's very hard, not just to figure it out, which is impossible, but to even come to peace with the idea that you can't figure it out, that you're stuck. And we come this morning to the Akedah, the most analyzed story in the Bible. And I must tell you, I don't know whose fault it was, or for that matter, whose merit it was. Because on the one hand, you say, well, look, it's clearly Abraham's doing. Abraham receives the command and says, I'll do it. And he gets up early in the morning, and he saddles his donkey, and he takes his son, and he brings him up on the mountain. But then you think about it, and you see, well, Abraham's only doing the will of the creator of the universe. So maybe it's God's fault. And what's Abraham supposed to say? You made everything, but I know better. On the other hand, if you follow the chronology of the Bible, and you do it carefully, as the rabbis point out, there is good evidence to believe that Isaac was a man by this time, so maybe it's his fault. Why didn't he say, Abraham, no? By the way, if your cell phone goes off, it's your fault. Just want to point that out, in case anybody's wondering. That's not my fault. Why didn't Isaac just say, no, I'm not going to do it? Maybe it was Sarah's fault. After all, what responsible mother lets a father take a kid for 3 days on a journey with an axe and no sacrifice? You can spin it any way you want. And that's the really difficult part of this. Everybody knows that you can make the following run. You talk to your parents or to your family, and it's your fault. You go to the therapist, and he explains that it's their fault. You go back to them, and it's the therapist's fault. And they're all right. And your head is in a tizzy. And you don't know what to do. It brings to mind the story that's often told, the Hasidic story of Rabbi Chaim Halberstam, who said when he was a young man, he decided to change the world because he was ambitious and idealistic. And then he got a little older, and he realized that for one person to change the world was beyond his powers. But now he was the rabbi of a community, so he figured he could change a community. So he decided he was going to change his community. But he discovered, as rabbis have before him and after, that it's not so easy for a rabbi to change a community. And he thought one of the reasons why it's not so easy is because rabbis start too big. He was going to change his family. But by now his kids were grown, and his wife knew him well, and he couldn't just change his family. They weren't going to listen to everything he had to say. So he decided, now that he was an old man, he was going to try to change himself. And even that, he said, was difficult. And I think there's a kind of analogy here. To try to understand the motivations of other people is difficult. The motivations of a society more so, and the many factors that are involved in the world that much more. It's tough enough to understand ourselves. But here's what I realized when reading the story both about Abraham and Hagar and Sarah and the Akedah. The Bible doesn't tell us their motivation. And it doesn't even tell us who's at fault. It only tells us what they did. And I think the point is that human beings are capable of such subtle and many-layered reasoning that we could spend all day arguing who, in fact, was responsible. Was it Abraham? Was it God? Was it Sarah? Was it Isaac? Was it Hagar? Was it Ishmael? Who was it? But all of that understanding ultimately doesn't change the story. And that the idea of the Bible is less to understand the world than to change the world. And understanding oneself is an endless quest. But acting has to be done today. And sometimes we get wrapped up in the desire to understand at the expense of the need to change. When God came to Abraham, Abraham didn't seek an understanding. Abraham sought an answer. And that is part of our task. We study, we learn, we discuss. But if that paralyzes us, then we lose. There is the famous story in philosophy of Buridan's donkey, who is stuck equally between two bales of hay. And because he is logical, since Buridan's donkey, not usually called a donkey, by the way, in the philosophical literature, but we'll use the word donkey for now. The point is, Buridan's donkey is supposed to be the perfect example of a philosopher. And he won't do anything illogical. And to take a step in either direction would be illogical because the two bales of hay are equally distant. And it's only logical to go to the closest one. So he starves to death. We live in a society in which we have made great strides in understanding science, society, and the human mind. But let's not kid ourselves. Sometimes ratiocination, that is thinking, is at the expense of living. And so, from Avraham Avinu, from Abraham our father, sometimes, even we, as a very thoughtful and verbal and philosophical people, have to decide that it is time to stop talking and start acting. Shabbat Shalom.